So, hello everyone. Let's wait a couple of more minutes. So let's give it one more minute and see if people are about to join. Okay, this is Stefan Håkansson. I think we should try to get started. The proposed...
I'm here. This is Harald. I'm here too.
Okay, great. Dom, are you online?
Yeah, I'm on the call.
Okay. So first item is to find a scribe. Martin, you have sort of promised to scribe today.
Yeah, I can do that.
Perfect. Thanks a lot. Okay, Dom, should you talk about the call recording?
Yeah, just a quick reminder, as I indicated on the mailing list, and as was requested before, this call is being recorded, just so that nobody gets surprised after the fact.
Okay. Thanks. Next item is to approve minutes of last meeting, and I think the last meeting was the TPAC one. So I'll paste a link to them into the IRC. Does anyone have anything against approving the minutes? I hear no objection, so I...
These are the same that I said didn't, were missing many of my comments, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, I object to approving these minutes. I don't think they reflect the conversation.
Are we talking about the same meeting? I thought this was the meeting where we talked about how we were going to reach 1.0 consensus. That was the meeting where I think you pointed out that the previous meeting didn't reflect.
Okay, I was just trying to look at these minutes, the link that got stuck up in the thing. Maybe I've got the wrong one.
There may be some confusion here. I think the 1.0 meeting, that was a web RTC meeting. So, I don't know, Cullen, you objected to the web RTC meeting minutes from the TPAC week. But do you also object to approving the media capture?
Sorry, I see what the confusion is. I don't know. I have no comment on these at this point. I'll ignore them.
Okay, but can we approve the minutes? Or should we postpone that until you have had time to review them?
I propose you postpone it.
Okay.
Partly like a critical path item.
Yep.
No. Okay. So let's move into the meat of the meeting, which is constraints. So the plan now is that Dan Burnett will present the recent changes of the existing design for 10 minutes, and we will have 10 minutes for questions. Then Jan Ivar will have 15 minutes to present his proposal, and with 10 minutes for questions on that one. And then we have 30 minutes to discuss and decide a path forward. So let's move on, unless anyone has a proposal that we should change something. Hearing none, Dan, can you take over?
Okay. All right. So I sent the slides out, I don't know, a couple hours ago to the list. And so you should all be able to access them now. So what I'm going to do is just very briefly describe, or very briefly state what the recent changes are, recent being essentially this largely this calendar year and going into December a little bit. And then what I'm going to do is just sort of briefly review the current syntax that resulted from those changes, because I think it's probably easiest to see what we're working with now by looking at that, easier than trying to give a detailed description of what some of the changes were. All right, so if you go to slide 2 in what I sent, one of the biggest changes is that the optional, so in the constraint structure, which we'll look at in a moment, there is an optional attribute. And that optional attribute has always taken a value which is an array. And the question, though, was what the elements of that array should be. And in the past, the elements of that array have permitted one attribute and value, which was difficult to enforce, difficult to understand, and so on. The way it works and is written into the spec now is that the element of that array, each element of that array, is a constraint set, which is exactly the same value that the mandatory attribute takes. And again, we will look at what the current syntax ends up being now. I'm just summarizing these changes for those of you who already understand the current syntax and just need a refresher. We did some terminology changing as well in that time frame. We used to talk about constraints, capabilities, and states. We now refer to states as settings, which is, I think, a little bit clearer. And the constraints, capabilities, and settings are now largely consistent in syntax. So we'll look at that in a moment. But you'll see that there are some very nice parallels between them and how they're structured. And they also have been pulled together out as a separable interface, the constrainable interface. All right. So sorry, I'm just looking at the minutes here and making sure that it's correct. Okay, so actually, no, with respect to the minutes, Martin, the optional elements have always taken an array. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I see how you read it. Never mind. The elements in the optional array meet what you say in what you typed in the minutes.
Feel free to correct the minutes at any point.
Okay. All right. I wish we were using
something other than this. But don't get hung up on that. We have a recording.
That's fine. Okay. Yeah, actually, as Dom pointed out, though, the recording is available for us to review. It is not intended to be a substitute for the minutes. Okay.
For the record, since we're discussing that, it's a terrible idea. But okay.
All right, so moving on to slide 3. So the core of constraints now is what's called a constraint set. And in a constraint set, it is a JavaScript object with properties, width, height, and so on. And the values that those properties can have are either limits, so like a min value, a max value, a value, if you have an enumerated type, like a show facing mode here, you can actually have one of those values. And then you can also actually set specific values like you see for aspect ratio here. And that's really is just to be interpreted as a shortcut for setting max and min both to the same value. The properties and their allowed values and ranges are intended to be defined in an IANA registry. So then the constraints structure is, again, a JavaScript object that has two properties, mandatory and optional. The value of the mandatory property is a constraint set. The value of the optional property is an array of constraint sets, where the order is significant, which I'll talk about in just a moment. When I talk about priority later, what I'm referring to is in this array, if a constraint set appears earlier in the array than another one, then it has a higher priority, the earlier appearing one. Okay, moving on to slide 4. Okay, there are two ways in which constraints are used in the specification: get user media and apply constraints. The get user media call, I haven't shown all the arguments, but I showed the constraints one. So for get user media, the constraints argument is a JavaScript object which may contain an audio property, may contain a video property. The value for each one, if present, is a constraints object that we just looked at. Now, there is a shortcut syntax as well. Let's say you want to request an audio track, but you don't actually have any constraints that you wish to be used in selecting that track. Then in that case, you can put that second syntax that I show, where you just have audio colon true. So you have a Boolean true value. Yeah, I mentioned it here, audio and video. You don't have to specify both of those. If whichever one you specify is what will be requested, and you can't specify both one audio and one video. And actually, if we back up just briefly to slide 3, the properties in a constraint set is also not required that you specify all properties. In a constraint structure, it is not require that you specify both mandatory and optional, but you may specify both. All right. Again, I'm assuming most of this is review for most people, but just so we have a level set for the upcoming discussion. All right, so back on slide 4. Now, for capturing media, you use the get user media call. For configuring media that you already have, you use the apply constraints method on a track. And in that case, notice you don't need to specify audio or video. You just specify the constraint structure, because your track will be audio or video. It will be one of the two. Now, in both of these cases, the media capture and media configuration, all mandatory constraints must be satisfied. So for media capture, in order to actually get an audio track or to get a video track, all of the mandatory constraints specified for that audio or video must be satisfied. And each constraint set in the optional array is to be satisfied if possible with conflicts broken by priority order. So again, just briefly, that means approximately you start at the beginning of the array and you say, can I satisfy this? If I can, great. Okay. Now, nothing that I do later on can introduce an acceptable track that doesn't, you know, that violates this constraint. For media configuration, the same thing is true. When you are actually changing the configuration of a track, all mandatory constraints have to be satisfied in order to avoid having an error. And the user agent must attempt to satisfy each optional constraint set in order.
So Dan, so I understand the effectively, if I wish to have this is semantically expanded vis-a-vis the current this vis-a-vis the design of like maybe 6 months ago, and that I can now specify sets of things that should be specified in order, not just individual parameters, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. That's probably the most significant change since about 6 months ago. And actually, that set that you're specifying looks just like the set you specify for mandatory, right, as a value for the mandatory attribute.
Correct, but that's not a semantic change, it's a syntactic change, right?
Well, this is a syntactic change. It obviously has repercussions.
Right.
It has repercussions because an entire constraint set must be satisfied together.
Concur.
Right.
Okay.
So,
okay. Right.
All right. Excuse me, constraint set, right. Okay, slide 5. So I just wanted to show briefly also that we do specify capabilities and settings. So I'm just showing an example here. For capabilities, the main difference from what you saw for a constraint set is that only ranges or sets are permitted in capabilities. So this is what gets returned from a get capabilities call on a track. What I mean by only ranges or sets is that a capability description is going to give you the permitted ranges for the width, the permitted ranges for the height, the set of enumerated values that can be used for an enumerated type. It will not return a single value, right, because it's returning a capability, not a setting. As opposed to settings, which are next, these are returned from a get settings call on a track. In this case, you actually get back the setting, the value that has been set for the track. You will not get back any ranges or sets. And with both capabilities and settings, all supported properties are included for both. When you make a get capabilities call, you will get back you will get back values for all supported properties. Same thing for settings. Okay, slide 6. Very brief example here. Obviously, there's a lot more complexity we could go into. But if you look here, I'm showing this is for video. I'm configuring here. And I have, I'm saying it is mandatory that I have a minimum width of 640 and a minimum height of 480. And that it is optional that I have a width of 1920. And a height of 1280. Remember, that's a shortcut syntax, right? Width of 1920 means width of min 1920 and max 1920. And then I'm saying that aside from that, or I should say the next priority is that I would have an aspect ratio of 4:3. So what does this mean? This means that I want a 1080, wait a sec, I think I did this wrong. that 1280 I think should be 1080. Okay, I have a typo there. So anyway, I want this high def video, but if I can't get that, give me 4:3 video. And under no circumstances, give me video with less width or height than VGA, meaning I expect to get an error back of some sort if you cannot give me a video that at least has a width and height of VGA. Okay, that's it. Any questions?
Yeah, so in the case where you just described this example, if I'm not able to get 1080 exactly, but I could get like 1920 by, 720 or something like that, that would not be satisfied and would directly go to prefer a 4:3 resolution instead. Is that
correct? Is that right, and that's how I specified it. Correct. That's what would happen.
Yep. Okay. And in the capabilities case, simplified for example purposes? Like on a modern machine, you might get 24 different formats that the camera can do. Was your expectation that you would get each of those, or just a min max indicating like the minimum resolution width and the maximum?
I think what has been discussed so far is that it will be the overall minimum and the overall maximum. Again, this is for that track, right? Which means the source that you're already attached to.
I agree, but I'm thinking that, what was the decision for only returning the overall minimum and maximum instead of like a specific so the application could just choose directly once it already has access to the device?
Let's see. One of the main arguments I remember was the complexity of figuring out how to specify, how to return all of the various this by this values. Right? So with what you're asking about is going to, I think, eventually lead in the direction of saying, tell me that you can do 640x480, you can do 1280x1024, you can do et cetera. And once we start permitting that, the syntax of it gets more complex in a hurry, especially as you start considering new properties that could be added that might interrelate in some way.
Okay. I mean, the native applications already, deal with this sort of thing, and, they seem to manage. I was curious about the rationale.
I'm not really, right now, I'm not trying to go into justifications for why it's done one way or another. I have a variety of thoughts on that I could discuss, but I don't want to waste our group's time. Largely, I just want to make sure that people understand where we are now.
Justin, Colin here. I think one of the issues was, too, that it's, lots of modern cameras, it's not just that they return 12 or 16 things. It's that they can do a nearly infinite number of things.
True, but the APIs still allow enumeration. They have to be finite because the native APIs do allow enumeration, and the enumeration eventually completes. So
yeah. and again, one of the original reasons I think it's important for me.
I don't want to get too hung up on this.
Yeah. One of the other reasons was initially when we were starting, there were severe concerns about fingerprinting, and so we basically stayed away from providing details about anything at any point. But that was also because we had never had any detailed discussion and decisions regarding fingerprinting at that time, right? We have since then, and we have a structure that a process by which we determine when we can give more detailed information, and now that we have that process, we could talk about that. Is how, how else you might return capability information.
I think if the camera is already open, enumerating the camera modes is probably, not the most effective way of fingerprinting.
Let's not dive too deeply into this. Let's also watch the queue.
Right.
Dom seems to be on the queue.
That was from before, sorry.
Okay.
Now Justin's on the queue, right?
So the one question I had was, there's the previous question about how are unknown mandatory constraints supposed to be handled? And I didn't follow all the discussion, but I'm just kind of curious, is there a summary of what the current thinking is?
Right. So I'm going to give you my understanding, and I'm happy to have others jump in here if they don't believe that my description is accurate. If a property is listed as mandatory, then it must be satisfied in order for that mandatory constraint to succeed. Okay, and otherwise, it must actually return it must fail in the way that we define in the specification. So, for example, if they get user media call, the failure is the failure callback. And then for the apply constraints, actually, I need to look at it. I don't remember exactly
what we do there. You get the error callback.
Yeah.
Apply constraints.
Okay, so same thing.
Yep.
So that's, I think it's me. That's certainly my understanding. And if that's not right, then I don't want to have any other discussion about syntax until we resolve this point, because it's like an incredibly critical point. And so we need to, if there's actually a disagreement about this topic, we need to resolve it.
Right. This was, in the original design, the intent was that from a developer's perspective, right, if you specify that something is mandatory, then you mean it, right? It really is mandatory. Otherwise, it shouldn't be specified in that mandatory list.
That has also been my understanding. Harald.
Okay, so we're hearing... it sounds like I've described it correctly. Is there anyone else? Okay, let's see. Yanivar, I think you're next.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So I have a question about, so these are not dictionaries, right? We're looking at.
No, they're not.
So given that, what are the rules that govern what types are allowed and what validates these properties that we see? I mean, it seems very simple when they're written like this, but we can't – there's nothing – since you're saying this is a JavaScript or an object, I guess, JavaScript in many cases, there are no rules for that. So wouldn't we need to specify all those?
I'm going to let some other people speak to this point.
My understanding is that the only reason we cannot use dictionary is that there is no way to check the object to dictionary conversion for unknown members. And that's the only difference we want to have with between dictionary and these objects. And that only applies to the one we pass in as mandatory constraints. These are almost dictionaries.
So I put myself back in the queue. I have one more question. Are these objects passed by value or by reference?
Intended to be passed by value. That's why they have getters.
Okay, because if they're objects, they will be passed by reference.
I'm not really following why this is an important question.
Well, maybe I'll be working on that in my presentation, so we can probably defer that.
The question I want to make sure we resolve is that is there not a way to express that I would like this constraint satisfied and I want this to fail if it's not satisfied. And if there is such a way and we all agree there should be such a way, then we're fine. And if we don't agree that there's such a way, then we need to debate that before we discuss syntax.
So I thought we all agreed upon that was my, that's the basis of the system. I think we agree upon that and have several times, so.
Yeah, I agree. We all agree.
The only reason I was asking was that I thought there was some controversy about this topic, and I didn't know if it had been resolved or not. If it has, please carry on.
Yeah. So I propose we move on now with Jan Ivar's presentation, so we have time for discussion after it.
Yep, I'm fine with that.
So, Jan Ivar?
Yes, I just pasted the link for the slide. I don't know if it didn't seem to be clickable. I apologize.
Oh, cool.
I pasted it. I'm not sure why that link didn't all turn blue for me. But in any case, I hope you have the slides. I sent out two versions, unfortunately. So if you're on slide one, you want to make sure that the date is 3/26/14. If it's 3/25, you have an early version. Don't worry, you can still follow along, except the only difference is the examples will have video groups around them. So pretty much the same thing. It's just a syntax update. Let me get my notes. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes.
Way to go. Okay, good. So on slide one, this proposal constraints, I call it constraints 2014, just to differentiate it. It's still constraints. But this proposal aims to describe our constraints in plain, boring WebIDL and to end any innovation here so that we can get back to our core mission and move on. And briefly, the backstory here is that in 2013, our spec had to give up describing constraints in WebIDL, which meant leaving readers to figure them out mostly from prose instead. Now, this was necessary to save a syntax that in hindsight is problematic. And this proposal targets that problem syntax. So very quickly, with dictionaries, there are two problems. You can't have unknown numbers, and you can't repeat numbers. So slide two. So this proposal, and I apologize for my voice. I'm just recovering from a cold, so hopefully you'll understand me. This proposal uses dictionaries throughout. And the first thing to remember with dictionaries is that every member is optional and every member is passed by value. Now, passed by value means that when you pass this to a browser, the browser makes a clean copy with only what you see on the screen here. There's no stowaway JavaScript objects with pawn-to-own exploits. And we have WebIDL compilers that generate binding code that does this for us, and that adds a layer of safety. And the same way, when the browser returns something to you, that's a copy as well, and not the same object that the browser is using internally. So you can keep that object alive, you can modify it later, and nothing happens. That's desirable, and it may sound obvious, that objects are actually passed by reference in JavaScript. Now I'll speed up, but I think this is actually the most important line. So let me point out a few things here. This is the default behavior. We list our preferences, and the browser picks the best match. So this behavior doesn't actually exist today, because today there's no way around specifying order. So what that means, even when we don't care about order, the order that we feed our constraints in matters and affects the outcome, even if it's in a small way. This may limit the browser from using its best judgment, which is bad if the order is arbitrary and does not reflect our wishes. So what we're seeing here, I think, is a great default behavior, because the browser is still fairly free to pick what's optimal on the system and can choose hardware-native resolutions, etc. So here, I mean, we're one step away from not having any constraints at all at this level. So it serves as a nice midpoint in easing into using constraints. Contrast that with today, where we don't have a default behavior. Today, we're forced to pick either mandatory or optional. And I suspect people don't always understand the difference or the consequences. Next slide. Slide three. So here's the main proposal.
Hang on a second. Tim, were you going to make the point you made in IRC? Jim?
Yes. Just the point I made in IRC. That you can have within a constraint set that individual object constraints are not ordered, so you do not have to specify order. The order only matters if you have multiple constraint sets. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Well, I'm sorry, what was that in relation to something I said?
Yes, so you said, Johnny Bar, you said that constraints implicitly were ordered and there was no way to unorder them, but that's not correct, because you can specify, if you look at the syntax on Dan's slide, you provide a list of constraint sets, and then within the constraint sets, there's no implicit order. So you provide one constraint set.
Yeah, that's quite a recent change, and that was since December, and frankly, I don't think you guys have thought that through, because if you write it that way, every constraint within the curly brackets are actually required, even though they're listed in optional. So you kind of wrote...
Yeah, but optional means something different there. Well, they're all required. The whole set must be satisfied, but if it's an optional constraint set, if it's not satisfied, you don't call the error callback, you go on to the next optional constraint set. So there's still a clear semantic difference.
I'm not arguing for one semantic or the other. I'm just trying to get clear on what it says.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at constraints 4 months ago, okay, then you had key-value pairs in mandatory, and you had key-value pairs in optional. And in optional, the order mattered, correct?
Correct.
I mean, okay, Yanivar, I need to correct something on that. So optional did not have... it had ordered. If you look at the way it was described, it was actually ordered. I don't know how. I'm trying not to say the word object here because you object every time I say the word object. So, but basically, it was an ordered list of open curly brace, single property name colon single property value. Close curly brace, okay? And the problem was that the specification was restricting us to only one property name value. And all that happens now is that you can actually have more than one property name and value, but it was always the case that that those were to be treated, those were independently. It was the array that mattered, not the fact that they are properties. So it's the array that provided the ordering, and ordering only mattered when you had the array and didn't otherwise. So the syntax has been simplified to make it very clear that you have, you know, open curly brace, properties and values, closed curly brace, right, and that that's one element in that array.
Well, it doesn't change anything. That what you see on the screen here on slide 3 is not possible today, because I'm saying All right, let me go back to slide two. All right. I'm saying you either, you know, the optional things are width, height, aspect ratio, and frame rate. And those are optional to each other. And there's no order. That, how would you describe that today?
A single optional constraint set.
No, those are all, that means all of them, right?
Oh, well, so, then you would have four constraint sets, each with one, and it would mean the same thing.
If you
unless you wanted the min and max on width and height to also be separate, in which case you would do those individually as well.
If you took width, height, aspect ratio, and frame rate and put them all inside a single object in the optional array, then that would mean something completely different than if you had width, height, aspect ratio, and frame rate as separate entries in the array. And not just the difference being order, the difference being whether you have to satisfy all of them or none of them.
Correct.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So back to slide two then. There's really no, this I think is a much simpler default because the web developer just says, you know, I haven't used constraints before, but I'm going to add some. And here's what I would like, browser. You give me that or pick me the best one. And at this level, we don't even specify an order. So, and that has a benefit because it doesn't constrain the browser, the UA, in picking the best thing. And it can pick based on what it thinks is best for this device, native resolutions and so forth, and still stay within most of the requirements, hopefully all the requirements of the user. Is that clear?
So you're saying that in this case, you're telling the browser to go pick the width or the height or the aspect ratio or the frame rate or any combination it likes and satisfy them or not, right?
We should probably have some language that says a UA should favor sources that match more than one constraint higher than, should rate them higher than other sources that have lower, fewer matches. But ultimately, that's what I originally had, and then the UA would only pick if there was a tie. But I thought Ecker had a good point that on the list, I think the more, at this level, since this is the default behavior, I don't see any reason to constrain the browser at all. We can trust the browser to pick the best case in this case.
So these are hints.
Sorry, I didn't hear the last name.
I think I get what you mean. These are hints.
All right, so on slide three,
before we move on, can we clear the queue? There's like several people in the queue here.
Yeah, so Adam here first.
Okay, yeah. So I was just going to say that I agree with Geneva that this is not possible today because of all the if stuff. If you put several constraints in one constraint set as the element of the array, I mean it's an and between all of those. But I think that was cleared out. So
okay.
You can remove me.
Callan, you're next.
So I think that the important thing to realize in this discussion, though, is that being able to specify on the optional constraints which ones were most important, particularly in the use case that was brought up very early on, was, you know, if you want to be able to say, I want this resolution, but if you can't do this resolution, at least give me this aspect ratio, or maybe you care more about the aspect ratio than the resolution. That was exactly the type of thing that there needed to be a way to make sure that was under control of the JavaScript, not selected by the browser. Now, maybe you also want to be able to support an environment where the browser itself gets to choose of the optional constraints which ones to satisfy and which ones not to. But there was a definite requirement to at least be able to do it the other way, where the JavaScript actually has a predictable experience about what's going to happen.
Yes, I agree.
Dan, you're next.
Yes. I was going to say something a little similar, which is that the You know, when we first started this long, long ago, there were people who wanted to provide hints. The problem is that, in general, it seemed to be the user agent providers, the browser implementers, who wanted developers only to have hints with the expectation that the browser would do the wise thing. And developers who said, forget that, browsers never do what I want. If I just let them do it, I need 100% control. And so the constraint syntax that we have currently, you know, is a compromise between those two to allow for the developer to provide more precise controls when it matters. So I think I understand what you're saying with this. I do want to say on your slide two, what you describe as the behavior of that is absolutely doable with today's syntax, with the current syntax. It is a different syntax than what you're showing, but it is absolutely possible to get the behavior that you describe.
I disagree. I mean, because here it doesn't say that width is more important than height, or height is more important than aspect ratio, or aspect ratio is more important than frame rate, which is, I believe, the only way that you could express this today.
Okay. All right. I hear you. Yep.
I mean, it's a small point, but I mean, and there's a small difference there. So,
there is a small difference there that the, that's right. The, actually, yes. Okay. Yep.
So I have more slides. So hopefully some of this will be addressed. So this is the default behavior only.
So, next slide.
Okay, I see Dan on the queue. Another one, okay. So, slide three. My notes disappeared here, sorry. But yeah, so here's the main proposal. A special require member that lets us list names of individual constraints we require. And this is pretty much identical to mandatory. It just looks different. So, next slide. And slide four. And so what's different? When does this matter? So here's an example. Say there's a new constraint called focus that our browser hasn't heard of before. And this app requires infinite focus. And you'll see it down. Infinity is actually a constant in WebIDL. Now, the problem is the browser won't see this focus dictionary member at all, which is why it's shown as grayed out. It just won't be there. Now, why, you ask, do dictionaries work that way? And the short answer is because focus's type is unknown here. So the browser would be looking at a raw JS object. And WebIDL pretty much exists exactly to avoid that. So the lesson learned is don't map requirements to dictionary members. Map them to strings or other things that survive. Next slide. And that's it. That's the core proposal, the minimum that I think we need. I have two extensions that we probably want if we want to get feature parity, but they add complexity. So moving right along to slide six, extension number one is a prefer member that lets us set our preferred order for non-required constraints. This is after required constraints are dealt with. And when we do that, we get the same optional algorithm that we have today for the constraints listed. This gives us feature parity, except there's a star down there to remind me that you can't list the same constraint twice because these are members of a dictionary, not an array, which leads to the next slide. Extension number.
We have Dan on the queue, I think.
That's okay. Go ahead and finish this, and then I'll speak.
Okay.
So extension number two is to add an ideal member to ranges. Now, to back up a bit, we constrain a value with either a sequence or a range, depending on type. Now, sequences inherently have an order already. So if we want, they can express preference quite easily, saying the first member is more important than the next. I'm not saying they do today. But in any case, ranges can't. So we extend ranges so that they can express preference with min, max, and ideal. Ideal is a target value within the acceptable range. And this lets us say things like, I prefer higher values within this range or values closer to a target. A detail here is that we never fail on ideal. Only min and max still count to satisfy the constraint. But ideal is used to rank results if there are more than one, and it also helps determine what's ultimately applied if you have a camera with choices. And as a side note, as a bonus, ideal can also be used to return native settings from get capabilities. But this structure happens to be reused there. So you can figure out that my camera, while it has many resolutions to offer, is 1080p native, for example. And next slide. So there are benefits for the user who gets better defaults, not having to deal with order upfront, and it's harder to use mandatory by accident, something we talked about in November about wanting. We've made preference easier to express in many cases compared to having to rely on the optional order logic of today. And it's simpler than before, quite literally simpler, which means conversely there are some cons here in that theoretically, at least, there are edge cases that were possible before that aren't now, but hopefully nothing that makes any sense. So for implementers, we get a specification that is specific, not general. Everything is defined in WebIDL, plain boring WebIDL, that should not be controversial to tag or anyone. There's no constrainable interface here because things are defined in context, and constrainable removes context. It's 100% safe because we pass by value instead of by object reference. And that's really the end of my presentation. I did not put a slide in about compatibility because I claim we don't have a problem with compatibility because no existing browser actually implements constraints, spec constraints. So, I'm sure we can do well with Apollo for that. So with that, the next page is the before and after comparison, and followed by a requirements page that I got graciously got from Jim Barnett. And after that is the full web IDL. And with that, I can open for questions. The comparison shows the simplest example and the most complicated example I can think of. So.
I just want to say this and be done with it. The pass by value, pass by reference, I think is actually an irrelevant distinction here. Only in the, I don't mean that there's an that those two are not distinctly different. What I mean is that the current syntax is intended to work the same way that you described for your proposal with regard to that. So I don't think that's a distinction we need to discuss.
Yeah. Yes, the values you specify are not an object. They are converted to an object. So it's passed by value, and it becomes an object inside the UA.
Well, I would argue only that, we might not want to discuss it, but we should still be clear about that it is passed by value, when JavaScript objects are not. So the thing is, dictionaries, there is no other pass-by-value construct in WebIDL. Dictionaries is it. So, and it seems a pretty good fit for what we want. So it would be quite, it defines a lot of detail for us, semantics, and, you know, what happens if you don't specify something, and if you specify twice, and all these rules that a whole other working group has taken care of for us. Now, we can rely on all that, or we can invent our own and open us up to a lot of scrutiny, with spec reviews, like tag, and try to go it alone. And I don't think we should innovate in that area. I think we'll be done faster and quicker by just realizing our syntax was broken, change it, express it in plain WebIDL, and move on. This is not our core area.
Jim, you're on the queue.
Well, I just wanted to point out that if the important thing is to get web IDL, there is, I'm sorry, there's echo. If you
people, please mute if you're not speaking.
If the important thing is to get web IDL, we can get something that's exactly equivalent to the existing proposal, has the same expressiveness, by saying the constraints are a list of dictionaries, and then using the required keyword, as Yanni Var suggests, to call out the mandatory ones. And then you get the same back-off behavior by going down the list. Each list has to be all satisfied together. So it's got the full expressiveness of the current proposal and is web IDL compatible. So there is that option.
I don't understand that, Jim, because that doesn't I don't think the require is exactly the same as mandatory.
Well, we assign it to be. If any, given a set, if any constraint back marked as required is not satisfied or is not found in the set, you call the error callback.
But in the current syntax, you can actually specify width multiple times, right? You can have a constraint set that specifies a certain width, another constraint that specifies a certain width. That's an optional, and you can have a completely different one in mandatory. So what does require mean instead of having the mandatory? Which of the optional values are you requiring? Or about the mandatory one that you want?
Remember, each dictionary, a given constraint only appears once. So you can have the same constraint appear in multiple dictionaries, and it means exactly what it does to have the backup order. If you mark it as required, then if it's not satisfied, you get the error callback. Otherwise, it's optional, and it means it's handled the same way optional constraints are handled now.
Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like, because you emailed me a little bit about this, it sounds like what you're proposing is to take my entire proposal and make it one entry in an array, which
yes.
I think would be a new proposal. And I'm not sure I agree that, I mean, if expressiveness is the be-all, end-all here, I mean, we seem to be going in the right direction, but I really want to warn about the complexity we're seeing here. Like, even with the change that you can have multiple keys now inside each array element of an optional array, I think it's confusing. Because now I can write width, comma, height, and depending on how the brackets are lined up, that either means and or it means or. So, and I think we're way overkill on complexity here. I think we started out long time ago with a single object that probably naively had mandatory and optional, and we probably even thought there was an order back then, and then we realized, oh, that's not how dictionaries work. Okay, let's make it an array. And then we thought mandatory will always be there. Oh, no, that's not how dictionaries work. Let's make it an object. And I think at some point our requirements have grown over time with our proposal, and I think that's worrisome.
No, it's the result of discussion and people looking at what they need to do. I think a lot of the issue here depends on what kind of industry we're in. Genesis writes high-end enterprise software. We want every bit of power we can get. Our stuff is complicated. It's all hell. And we need it to be able to do all this stuff, and I think you'll find Cohen needs to be able to do this stuff too for similar reasons, and Dan as well. That's one of the reasons we have a complicated expressive proposal, because when we think about it, we realize we need to be able to do all these things.
Well, see, I hear that, but there seems to be a huge disconnect between what you're saying and the examples we're being shown.
Well, the examples are intended to be relatively simple to illustrate the concepts of the syntax. We showed you a real-world Genesis app, you'd never get through it.
I would love to see that. I mean, if the main desire here is for complexity, I mean, we should have complex examples to make sure that the needs are met. I think that the recent changes is quite confusing. You can have multiple things in an optional array that are not optional to each other.
Let's move on in the queue now. We have Karen first.
Yes,
So I think I'm next on the queue here. Let me sort of add in. So I separate the in looking at these two proposals, the way I look at them is differences in the semantics of what it's capable of expressing and then the syntax. Okay. And what's a syntax change to me is, you know, I could write a program that transformed one thing to the other thing. That's just a syntax change. I don't really care about the syntax deeply. I can live with whatever syntax. But when we get to the actual semantic issues, I think that at this point, these two have largely converged, like, other than the point you can't put in the same constraints multiple times. Like, we can't put in width or height multiple times, and including the mandatory width can't be the same as the option. It has to be the same as the optional width. And so the place where I think this is going to fall down a little bit is, for example, on if you're trying to use source ID to pick a camera. That seems to be one where we've clearly identified we want to be able to have multiples of. And I think there's probably other examples if we sat down here for a while. So, I mean, I guess I'm basically asking of our, you know, would you be willing to move your proposal to one where, I'm not talking about how the syntax would change exactly, but one where the semantics of what it was capable of expressing certainly included multiple things of the same type, like width multiple times for the example that's on the slide.
Was that a question for me?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'd be happy with anything that compiles in libidl and it does not cheat with objects. So, yeah. However,
but look, I mean, if that's the problem, okay, we can trivially fix that in the other ones by putting quote, you know, by putting name colon before the width and then putting width in quotes and we're done, right? I mean, like, if your problem is that it's not WebIDL, I think that that's an easily resolvable issue.
I would also want to note, though, that the source ID case you mentioned, I believe, is covered because I think both proposals offer not just ranges but also sequences. And you can already, I believe, specify in both proposals source ID colon and then the sequence of source IDs that you require. I didn't hear Dan there, but I think that I believe that's correct in both proposals. So
okay. It seems we lost Callum there, but Randall, you're on the queue next.
hi. So I made this comment on IRC as well, or a variant of it, which is basically that we've generated a very, you know, complex language for specifying stuff. Not quite Turing complete, but it's working. Anyone who's not talking, mute. Thanks. I hear from Jim that there are some applications for which this expressivity is actually useful. I think we have done if that's the case, we've not done a great job of capturing the requirements for this, such that we can go back and say, you know, this proposal meets these requirements, this proposal doesn't meet these requirements. It's been talked around but not captured, and that's a problem because that makes it hard to evaluate the proposals. And the other thing is, you know, there's a danger of providing something that has every, you know, Swiss Army knife of every possible, you know, covers every possible, you know, situation and solution. And in the process makes it incredibly hard for the vast majority of applications and developers to use. As I mentioned, the syntax of this is complex enough that regular users who want to do more than just audio video colon true are going to end up needing a helper app just to build their constraints. And I don't think that's a great thing for the web. It might be good for certain very complex applications. But I think we need to, you know, keep the rest of the people trying to build these in mind as well. I mean, that, and that's sort of my point.
Okay, Harald, you're next.
So I don't regard these things as very complex as languages go. And make no mistake, both of these proposals are small purpose-built languages. I happen to like purpose-built languages because they're usually useful. The problem we have now is that we have a proposal for a reduction in functionality. I have a problem with justifying this by the, I mean, saying that you can't do it in pure WebIDL doesn't have a very compelling, isn't very compelling to me, given that the WebIDL in some cases has the expressivity of a wet noodle. I mean, we could, by specifying some behavior that would take one line of JavaScript to describe, turn the current proposal into something that where we could use dictionaries. If we could just say that, okay, before you turn it into a dictionary, you run this one line of JavaScript on it. So I would like to look for what we can do that does the least amount of damage to what we have already discussed. And Janiva's proposal, because it forces you to have only one value for any given property, is a reduction in expressiveness. That's all.
Okay. Colin, you're up next.
I think I wanted to disagree pretty strongly with Randall and Dom here. I mean, could people go to slide 9 for a minute? It has the two examples comparing these. These are nearly identical. I mean, when I look at these from a complexity point of view, you're right, it is a language, but both the two languages being proposed are identical in almost every way except the one issue of values can't occur multiple times in Janivar's proposal, which is, you know, as Harald proposed up, is a reduction in functionality from what we already agreed to, and I think we probably have real needs for it. So I'm not really seeing the win here. These are very close.
Yeah, Zachar. I mean, I agree with Colin. It does seem like it's somewhat important to be able to say, you know, I'd like this, then this, when these are all the same parameter you're attempting to express. There seems to be some contention on whether or not Yanni Barz's team proposal can do that. So if it can, then I guess that's one thing, and if it can't, that's another. Like Harald, I'm extremely unmoved by the notion that this is that the current thing isn't WebIDL compliant. That seems like that seems like wearing a straitjacket for no good reason.
Okay, Yanni Barz.
Okay, yeah, I want to simplify this. I think we can actually break up two different things here. And it might make sense to discuss the require, because in order to make it WebIDL, we just have to solve the mandatory problem. And the require does that, I think. And so, and maybe we can discuss that separately from the expressiveness we desire from optional. Does that make sense? Because right now they're linked in this proposal. And I guess this proposal tries to also reduce the complexity. And what I mean with expressiveness is it's simplicity of expressiveness, trying to hit and simplify so that you don't express the wrong thing. And, I mean, the expressiveness pretty much doubled in December. So that seems to be quite a moving target. And I'd like to point out that you already have mandatory, which means, I mean, you run the risk of a user prompt, but you ask for something, if the user doesn't have it, it fails, and you can try again. Do you have that, or if you're a complex web app developer, I'm wondering how much you need. You need a complete language and the ability to attempt multiple times.
Because of the way the permission prompt works, I don't think we have the ability to ask multiple times as part of the issue, right?
Yes, if the user doesn't have it, I don't believe we get a prompt. If you're saying, I need this certain resolution, and the user can't, none of the cameras the user has can support that, it returns right away, right? There's no prompt.
There was really extensive debate about this topic. I prefer your answer, but I don't think we resolved it.
Right. So how much complexity do we need here? I mean, because none of this is needed. Once you get to media stream track and the apply constraints, you have all the information you need to express quite simply what you want. And you don't need all this complexity. All this complexity seems to be only needed in an initial GUM call before you even have the user's permission. And that seems excessive to me.
So, Yanivar, I hope I'm not jumping the queue here. I had to step away from the computer, so I can't see who's on the queue. Okay, I guess, Randall, you're next. I'm sorry, Justin Jessup. Never mind. I'll put myself on the queue.
Okay, so, and it's Justin.
Okay, so, you know, one of the things that I think we haven't really talked too much about is the backwards compatibility story. Yanivar talked about it a little bit. Just that we do need to update everything to deal with either of these proposals, but I am concerned that the update that is larger and like the sort of churn for developers is more for Yanivar's proposal. And if you don't feel like we're getting a lot out of it in terms of what we're able to actually express, yeah, I have a hard time saying we should actually incur that churn. So, you know, I think there might be some other things we could do that would allow us to deal with the WebIDL problem. You know, I think there have been some suggestions here. But overall, like, that seems like a more tractable way to go.
So, Brandon, you're next. And
okay.
I think we need to, sorry to step in, but I think we need to close the queue then.
I'll respond to Colin. I wasn't necessarily saying that either proposal is perfect by any means. I was saying to a large extent that there clearly are requirements here, as mentioned by Jim and other people, that are not well specified, are not well captured, and that makes it hard to evaluate. I can understand that there's some applications that have some more complex requirements, but those should have been discussed. And the fact the complexity of the solution has changed dramatically in recent past implies that, you know, those requirements weren't being met before and weren't specified. So that's a problem, okay? On the more, you know, I don't mind it being a language per se, but I worry about the complexity of the language for generic users. To Justin's comment, the question is how many people are using this, you know, in terms of which one to choose because of backwards compatibility. The question is how many people are using syntax that would be affected by either of these solutions. I don't know. I would imagine not a lot, but I don't know. And I don't mind necessarily having expressiveness, but I am concerned about, about the complexity and, you know, a mental complexity of this. So that's it.
Okay. Done.
Okay, thank you. So one of the so first of all, I actually think that the I think the requirements have been out there and have been discussed for quite a long time, actually. I think the problem has been honestly figuring out what is the best way to describe it in a specification, and whether that's WebIDL or some other way, that's been the challenge, right? You know, it's one thing if we say this is how we know it needs to look in JavaScript, and it's another if we say this is, you know, what do we have to do to figure out how to write it in WebIDL so that it does the right thing in JavaScript. Okay. The main thing I wanted to say, though, was that when this work started, and still today, the capabilities for getting access to and configuring media are not just for local use of that media. They may be for use of that media in a peer connection, for example. And in particular, it may be that you're on some sort of network where congestion may vary, for example. And so the point here is that there may be times when, because of the real-time nature of that communication, the browser needs to take action quickly. And the action that it takes quickly might just be stupid because it doesn't know what the developer wants. Now, we have moved away from requiring all of this specification to occur in the get user media call because we now have apply constraints. So it's possible to get access to the media and then specify your constraints later. But in any case, it is still helpful for the developer to be able to say, look, this is the kind of behavior I want if you need to make a change. Because keep in mind that these constraints, the effect of constraints is dynamic, right? As long as the user agent provides something that satisfies the constraints, it can change what it provides within the constraints specified by the developer. This is a big advantage. One of the things that developers really hate is when browsers actually make supposedly wise decisions for them that aren't ones they want, right? And so being able to specify these preference orders and so on allows for a lot of this. It allows for the developer to say, look, my application will not function unless I at least have this. But for the rest, this is what I'd like. Tweak it if you need to in order to get better overall performance, whether it's local performance or performance over my network, I don't care. But at least you can do something smart. For example, you can change the resolution, but don't change the aspect ratio because you'll screw up my app, which I very carefully laid out on the screen. So I think that's something else that actually has been not just implied, but actually stated back in the requirements work long, long, long ago from WebRTC on this effort. And it's something we need to keep in mind, that the complexity that we have is only there because there's an actual real need for it.
Okay, thanks. Jan Ivar?
Yes, so I agree with Jessup that there's really no way for a proposal to succeed when the requirements aren't specified ahead of time. And if we otherwise, chasing complexity, we can, you know, those are use cases. I mean, I think Robert O'Callaghan said it well, that we don't write for things that don't have use cases. We're supposed to have use cases first, and then we write things that fit to that. And this seems to be not doing that. About WebIDL, I hear a lot of people say WebIDL doesn't matter. Now, I think that's because you don't use a WebIDL compiler. For instance, Chrome does not use, I believe, a WebIDL compiler. Firefox does. And imagine you're discussing C++ with someone, and that someone does not have a C++ compiler. Okay? I mean, we're working on expressiveness, not just to human beings, but to computers. And as an example where this matters, just today I noticed Chrome has a bug in how it deals with constraints, and that if it finds any other member inside the constraint object, it fails. Now, that violates not just constraints, it violates dictionary. So these compilers that are there to help us understand how computers work and put rules so that developers can follow and have clear, consistent rules down to the very minute detail about how objects work. And if we want to sidestep all the work of the other working groups that work on this, I think we're going to have an uphill battle. So, the last point I wanted to point out was that, I propose that we look at mandatory separately from optional here. I think we can solve mandatory. I didn't hear any huge disagreements about how require works compared to mandatory, and that would fix our WebIDL problem. And I think separately, we should be able to discuss the expressiveness of optional, which is clearly possible to add to my proposal, for instance. You just add an array of stuff. So I think that might give us a way forward. That's it.
Okay, thanks. Carlin, you're the last one, and I think you have to be a bit...
Sure. Mine's quick, too, and people keep saying that we haven't had requirements for this. It's just not true. I mean, we spent a lot of time discussing this in the working group, and I will note that the expressiveness issue here, not the syntax issue, but the expressiveness issue that we're discussing, which is the multiple, that the version of the draft from August 2012 had that in there, and it was discussed a whole lot well before that. So, you know, it's not like this got added last December. This exact expressiveness has been there from more or less the first time that constraints got put into the editors put it into the draft. Your proposal you were just saying there of like, hey, if we're going to stick with that same expressiveness and maybe we can figure out how to fix our syntax issue without changing the expressive issue, yeah, I'm interested in that. But, I mean, the idea of reducing that part of the expressiveness issue I think is going to be a problem for people.
Okay, so time to summarize, I think. I mean, we have listened to Dan, and we have listened to Jan Ivar, and we have learned the recent changes to constraints. We have also learned more about Jan Ivar's proposal that he described, and we have also seen it on the list. What I hear in this discussion is that there are a couple of persons who think that the constraints are overcomplicated right now and that there would be a good thing to make them simpler. But I hear more people saying that we need the expressiveness that we have with the currently defined constraints. So I don't think we have any consensus for reducing the expressiveness. But what I would like to know, I mean, I hear Carlin opening up for changing the syntax of the current constraints to make them more WebIDL compatible. Would that be a possible path forward?
I like that. This is Jim. I mean, I think that's a good path forward.
So what about Dan? I know have been working the longest of us, you and Carlin, with constraints. What is your view?
My view is that my kids came home and said something to me right at the moment that you made your proposal, and I missed that one sentence. I heard Jim say that sounds good, but I didn't hear that one sentence.
My one sentence was that should we follow the path that Carlin indicated we could take that to not reduce the expressiveness of the current constraints, but investigate if we could make them more WebIDL compliant.
Yes. Yes, I would be fine with that too, because I agree with Colin that the syntax for me is not really the issue so much, it's the expressivity.
Could we form a team with Jan Ivar, yourself, and Jim, perhaps, to work on this? Would that
yes.
be okay with you, Jan Ivar?
Yes.
because from my position as chair, I fear if we don't get some kind of agreement on this soon, then Dong will again come out and say we should split out constraints from the main spec, and I don't think that is what we want. I would like them to stay, at least.
So the suggestion is that Jan Ivar and Dan form a team that is tasked to come up with a minimum proposal for a change that would make mandatory acceptable with the current expressiveness, acceptable web IDL with the current expressiveness?
Yeah.
I can support that.
Sure, because it has my name on it.
So I'll work on that, too.
Can I ask for clarification on the expressiveness we're seeking, since that changed dramatically in December?
Exactly what part are you referring to? I'm not following.
The fact that you can have multiple key-value pairs in a single optional entry array,
Actually, to be clear, our understanding at the time that happened was that that would actually simplify things by being able to say that it was just a constraint set. You know, the intent wasn't to dramatically increase the complexity there.
Yeah.
It was the exact opposite, believe it or not.
I remember being part of that discussion as well. I think in hindsight, though, unfortunately, it creates a confusing problem in that by being able to combine things in the optional array with commas that now have the meaning of all of these or nothing, it actually opens up for a confusion and possibility of error where the user specifies things that they think they're saying this or that, when they're actually doing this and that. Because if you do square bracket, curly bracket, comma, 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 that's really more a mandatory requirement than an optional one.
Well, actually, I would express it as the previous version had an OR of single values, and this one has an OR of ands.
Yeah. I think that's too complicated and can lead to confusion and mistakes.
We got to that for a reason, so I'd certainly want to go back and look at what drove that change before we, you know, I mean, this is the problem. This is why you're getting so much pushback to start with, is we just, you know, people want to be done with this, and it seems like every 6 months a new person shows up and we go through the whole conversation again, and it's just, we need it to terminate. So I think we need to go back and look, we need to go back up what things were enabled or disabled by that change, and whether we can roll that one back. I think that's a separate discussion. And I think we're,
Note from part of what's driving this is that for the first time, you know, people are actually implementing these, and that drives a lot of the comments and so forth. Yanivar is implementing a lot of this for us, and therefore he has practical considerations he hits while trying to do it. And that's part, so we discussed it for a long time, but no one's really implemented it till now.
I think that's quite true.
But could we give this team of three persons like 2 weeks to see if they can come up with a joint proposal?
Someone has left the conference.
I think that's the most concrete thing we can do right now.
Plus one.
I think what we need to succeed, though, is a clear understanding of what the requirements are, maybe down to specific examples of constraints that we want to support. Where is the line of complexity?
I agree.
I'm uninterested. If we are going to be changing the semantic level information of this, I am uninterested in the conversation. I don't see it going anywhere, right? The thing is, if we want to fix the syntax so it's web IDL compatible with the current semantics, that's something that this team can get done quickly and we'll get the working group behind. If we want to change the expressiveness level to,
you know, remove stuff, I think that that's a, then we need a different discussion.
Yeah, that's a much bigger issue. And I'm, and with Cullen, I'm opposed to changing the expression. Let's just try to fix the syntax on the current proposal.
But before talking,
why are we so opposed to changing the scope of this?
So let me put it, the question differently. Before talking about changing the expressiveness, you know, I don't know that anyone actually fully understands the complete expressiveness of the current proposal. And the question is not about how big the expressiveness needs to be, but what is the level of expressiveness that we need for specific use cases. And I think the question that Justin started with is, can we get the use cases that require this broader expressiveness? And I think that's a fair question, even if we don't start from the perspective that we will change the expressiveness, at least understanding why we are stuck with that level of expressiveness is, I think, fair to the group and the world.
Wow.
I think you need to realize, Dom, that's a year-long effort.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say, too. Normally, I'd be making your statement, Dom, but we've been doing this already for quite a while, and we thought that things were actually stabilizing. So this is, I'll tell you, from an editor's perspective, this is really aggravating, actually.
So we have to restart
over discussing exactly what are the use cases that we want to support, when there's been a lot of discussion for a few years now.
Yeah.
No, I don't know that we have a document listing use cases that justify the current level of expressiveness, which is the only thing that I and others have been asking. Again, I mean, I don't know that we are saying we need to revisit everything, but since we are arguing that we need this exact level of expressiveness rather than saying we've come organically to that level of expressiveness and we don't know if it's the right level or not. So if we are assessing this is the level of expressiveness we need, I think coming up with one use case that demonstrates why that level is actually needed should be fairly straightforward.
Exactly. I mean, I agree with that, and like the fact that no one's implemented this until now, or not even yet, I think indicates that it is quite complex, and people are still managing to get by even without all the stuff being implemented right now. Like, it's not clear that this expressiveness is what's keeping people from, deploying applications.
Apparently, we don't need statistics either.
I mean, look, this is not totally fair. I mean, I understand what you're saying. If you're looking for one use case that helps motivate this, sure, I can understand what people do. But understand, we don't have written down use cases to motivate any of the stuff that we're doing at a widespread thing. It's just too slow to do standards driven by a fully requirement use-based analysis. It's too, it's slow enough as it is. So if it's just like somebody's asking, like, hey, why do we need this? And if no one can possibly remember on the mailing list, perhaps we need to, reevaluate what we need. Yeah, sure, I get that. But I think the use cases have been sent to the mailing list over and over and over and over again. I've stopped doing it. I'm not arguing for... I understand the trying to move it down to the minimum thing we can get and the simplest thing we can get, but the complexity all got added in for reasons along the way. The difference between the complexity of the two systems is, as far as I can tell, the only difference is the multiple objects, or multiple, allowing the same entry to be multiple times, which I think you'll find several use cases on that for the list, on the list. If we just need to fix the syntax, that's something I can see that happens quickly. If we want to reevaluate this from the beginning, I'm just trying to get the scope of the work. I mean, restarting at the beginning is not, I think we'll be back at exactly the same place. So I don't think we'll be in any better shape.
I mean, again,
from the beginning, could
we do it like this? I mean, we work on the syntax. Jim has made actually a requirement, draft requirements for constraints. I don't think if that covers all, but he could work a bit more on that, and people, if they dispute one of the requirements, we could ask Jim or someone else to put a use case for it. Because that was a good list Jim produced the other day.
Yeah, if you look at slide 10, I included Jim's requirements there.
So if we can go back to the previous proposal and get a proposal out that fixes the web IDL problem without changing the expressiveness of the current position, and see if that's possible, and then we can have the discussion about throwing out functionality separate from that. Please.
That sounds good.
Plus one. I think we need to end the call now. But there is an action on Dan, Jim, and Jan Ivar to work on the syntax. And we'll see how much we can do on requirements in that discussion. But people who want to see more about that should follow up on Jim's list of requirements.
Can I ask for clarification on, there's an elephant in the room here, which is the constrainable interface. It's kind of an obstacle to expressing things in WebIEL because it kind of removes the context of GUM. And it doesn't seem to me that, maybe this is not the topic for today, but constrainable doesn't seem to have more than one user right now, or any friends of more than one user. But we still need it.
Yeah, I think that's not a topic for today. We won't really know about other uses of it until we go over and see what we need for properties in the recording interface and the snapshot interface, and whether those fit constrainable or not. There are some people that think recording requires a very rich set of properties that the application set. Other people think, no, recording has no properties by itself, but all the properties of the underlying stream. When we get that discussion resolved, we'll have an idea about it.
It just seems to me that, like, get user media is a unique case because we don't want them prompt the user multiple times. And I have a hard time seeing how this really translates to other things where you could just get the capabilities and program the object directly.
Apply constraints.
One of the examples that was brought up on that is cameras that could tell you what their min and max width were, but could only do multiples of 16. You know, are we going to have a way to say what multiples of width the camera can do? I'm not arguing this one way or another with you. I'm just bringing up something that was raised long ago. Obviously, we could have the multiples of 16 be one of the things you got as the capable of cameras.
We need to end the call.
Yeah, we need to end the call now. Thank you all for contributing.
We have the action. Let's end the call.
Yeah, and a special thanks to Martin for scribing. Bye, all.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.